Hey, this is Mike, co-founder of the Bronx Brand and executive producer of Creative Hustle. Thanks for listening.
Look, I've been waiting so long for recognition. Keep my head above water, causing friction. Maybe I could be the one that you could spit. Maybe I could be the one to make you care. Please pass me the light, cause my L not lit. How the fuck you hustle, but you ain't got shit.
Yo, this is another episode of Creative Hustle. Thanks for tuning in. This is a podcast where we just showcase and highlight creatives who are striving towards their goals and what it takes to get there. I'm your host, Mike, for this podcast. And to my right is
Trill Cooker, also known as Jose. Thank you, Mike. It's I'm honored and humbled to have been invited to do this podcast.
No, I appreciate you coming through for real.
No, thank you.
So, Let's get started to kind of some of the first posts that you were putting on Instagram to where you're at now. So I saw you were doing Chef's Tape
Yes. A
long time ago. And now, you know, you've just been transitioning and growing. So let's just go through your whole process and story.
So Chef's Tape was a partnership with my cousin Scott. Mm-hmm. And we were two young chefs in the industry that were working a crazy amount of hours, and we were trying to figure out how can we work for ourselves.
Yeah.
So we started Chef's Tape, which was a catering company that we worked a lot with schools. I mean, we did a lot of their events, for the communities that they were hosting and stuff. Yeah. Like that. So that was kind of like the beginning of Trill Cooker, or just basically like the journey of kind of stepping outside of the box. Mm-hmm. and you know, working your regular job and still hustling on the side to make yourself known.
Yeah.
So that journey was amazing, man. Scott and I, we were able to kind of find, you know, ourselves as cooks and almost entrepreneurs, for the sense of the word, really, because, like,
yeah,
you know, we were the ones who not only were cooking for these events and preparing for them and setting them up and staying in touch with, you know, with the coordinators. We did everything. So it was something that we needed to do just to kind of like learn what it was like to like almost bet on your own guns.
Yeah.
You know, and we took Chef's Tape and we built that up for about, I want to say, like a year and a half or two.
Wow. Yeah.
And like I said, it was just doing a lot of private chef stuff, working with some schools. And then Chef Scott started working for, he actually got a position in Brooklyn for this restaurant. And so he took the position, and when he took the position as the executive chef, you know, I was like, listen, you're gonna be busy. So
I feel like
the industry or just anything you do is about growth, right? So
yeah,
you know, you never want to stay stagnant in a position. It's how can I get to that next position?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be a position. It's like, what do you need to learn more, right? So every day you have to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his learning, right? It was like, all right, cool, I just got this executive chef position now. You know, this is the next step for me. And for me, any chef that works with me, my whole thing is like, let's grow together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he grew right there. And right now, even building in these past few years, I've had chefs that started this with me. And now they're executive chefs or chef de cuisines and like really high-end restaurants.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, that's what makes me happy at the end of the day, is that through this journey, they were able to kind of like now
build
into their own.
Into
their own. Because I wouldn't want anybody to always, you know, kind of work with me forever. It's like the goal is to learn as much as you can to then now take your own.
Yeah,
steps,
to catapult you.
To catapult.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what Chef Scott and I did with Chef's Tape. I fucking still love Chef's Tape, man. We still have like little chains that we got from it, and
nice, yeah.
Just that movement alone, I think, was a powerful movement for, like, you know, at the time, I think Scott was 21 and I was probably about 27. So just being, you know, two young kids that really were just cooking to cook, really, because that's not really like what, you know, I can't speak for Chef Scott, but that's not what I aspired to be. I wasn't aspiring to be a chef.
Mm-hmm.
When I was younger. So just being able to find what that passion was and trying to do something on our own, that was pretty dope.
That's dope. So you go from chef's tape, just trying to figure out what you like, you know, passion for cooking, and now was that then the transition into the private dinners?
Yeah. So what happened was, obviously once Scott got the position, I was now kind of challenged to do events on my own, which I was not going to be able to do 100 people events on my own.
Yeah.
So I had to think like to myself, okay, how do I continue to grow my name and at the same time hustle on the side and do these private jobs where I'm meeting new people? It's about networking, like I told you earlier. So what I did was, you know, I branded myself as Chef Jose de Jesus, and I still have like the sweaters that I got made and all that, and just put myself on certain websites that hosted private chefs. Put up some menus, and then through that site I was able to get, you know, a bunch of like private chef gigs on the weekends or whenever I was off. So I used those opportunities to like almost connect with these guests, and like, you know, I was doing dinners in the Hamptons and like the Lower East Side and like private in penthouse apartments. So being a kid from the Bronx and like doing this cooking thing and finding that love, and then being able to utilize it to like now go cook in different situations, whether it be in a restaurant setting, in a catering setting, and now in like a private chef setting where I'm cooking for people who could be very important.
Yeah.
And might even open up doors for me.
Yeah.
In the sense of investing into a business. Those were things that I was kind of like, all right, this is pretty cool, you know? And I think that also challenged me on being a lot more social as well. Because me, when I was a kid and I was in like school, I wasn't the most social.
Me neither.
I was always like the most antisocial, and I had my friends and we always clicked and stuff, but like during class, you know, I wouldn't want to read aloud, I wouldn't, you know, want to participate. And I don't know if it was just because I wasn't into school or if it's just because I just wasn't, you know, just into talking aloud. But I definitely just feel like it was that. I just wasn't ready to be social. So cooking abroad in the sense of like out of my comfort zone helped me become a lot more social, which led me to a lot of things that I'm doing now.
So it opened you up socially and it opened you up to other opportunities as well.
Exactly.
So, and what part of the Bronx are you from?
So I'm born and raised, I'm in the South Bronx, 149th Wales Avenue. I love the fact that I'm from Wales Avenue, and that's W-A-L-E-S. And I'll spell it out because every time I used to get in the cab, I used to be 149 on Wales Avenue. They'd be like, okay, 149 Willis?
Wales
Avenue. Just being from like, you know, when we were growing up there, we always thought that area was Mott Haven, and now they're calling it like Port Morris, and like it just changes all the time. And it's like, man, we were there, we were just like, yo, we in the South Bronx, you know what I'm saying? I feel like growing up in that neighborhood was a beautiful thing for me. My whole family was there, you know, my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, so we all grew up together, you know what I mean? And we all looked out for each other, but we also, you know, growing up around that area, we knew the whole neighborhood. So everybody looked out, you know what I'm saying? And still like friends with like, you know, everybody I grew up with. And for the most part, you know, when I go around that area now, because now I live in a different part of the Bronx, but when I do go by to see my grandmother or to chill my uncles and stuff, it's always like just dope to be back, you know, where like you was, you know, hitting a sponge ball around or smoking a smacking a handball onto the wall, you know. And those memories kind of like, you know, remind me of like not ever having opportunity to break out of this box that we were in, which was like our neighborhood, right? So I'm forever grateful for, you know, 149 and Wales Avenue.
Hey, my mom's actually from 146 and 3rd, so it's not like
too far.
It's right there.
That's like it's a hop, skip, and a jump.
Yeah,
19 bus.
Trust me. Right by the Bronx here. She was right there. So you get you go back and you know, the community's kind of behind you. You know, it's a lot different there too now. Like everything's kind of changing. So you have the private dinners. These are opening up to new opportunities. then you start doing some, you start hosting some dinners. Am I right? Or
yeah, like the collaboration dinners we were hosting.
Yeah.
So once I started doing these private dinners, I kind of wanted to do my own thing. So it was going back to like when I mentioned doing dinners out of my house. About a few years ago, my wife and I and my in-laws, we got a house in Morris Park. So we were building up. My wife was like, you should do dinners here. And
I'm from Morris Park. My mom, you know, had me, grew up. We moved to Van Buren. Van Ness over on there.
That's just for me. I'm on Pierce.
Wow.
Van Ness is like two or one block over or something like that. It's crazy.
That's wild.
It's a beautiful neighborhood.
No, I love Morris Park.
You know, it's a beautiful, for me, I love it more so for my kids.
Yeah.
But I also love it because it helped. It's where I started this whole journey.
Yeah.
When it comes to like really, really doing it like what I really envisioned to do, right? Because doing the catering and all that other private chef stuff, that was just me testing stuff out. My vision has always been like hosting pop-up dinners or like hosting my own, you know, underground or secret restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And finding this house on Morris Park allowed me to test that, you know what I'm saying? So I'm forever grateful for that too. You know, I think that that's an important thing about the journey is like sometimes you're put in certain places or positions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about adjusting, and how do you utilize that, right? And how do you kind of build something from it? And we were able to build almost a little small restaurant inside of our kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, where we sat 8 guests, and we hosted dinner maybe once a month, if that. I was very busy at the time because I was also running a restaurant. I was working for Eataly downtown, and I ran that fish restaurant. So my sous chef was kind of gone for 3 months. So I was working 6-day weeks and like sometimes 7 or.
Yeah.
So whenever I had a chance, I was like, you know what? I don't care how tired I am. I'm going to host a dinner. And I would sell tickets. And it was like real kind of like secretive. And people would just have to send me DMs and pay through like a Cash App or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I had this little notepad where I wrote their names in and how many were coming and what allergies they had. And really had a system down just like without any technology. With all the technology we have, and it was kind of crazy because I was like, I could be utilizing so many different outlets.
And go right back to pen and
paper. And I just went back to the pen and pad, and it was like, but it was a lot of fun though because I knew people's names, I knew who they were coming with, and it was like very, very, very personable. And I felt like that also helped me build this experience to become a personable experience and make it very interactive at the same time.
Yeah.
So just through hosting dinners in the house kind of opened the door to me when I was, you know, working at Eataly to say, you know what? Running a $3 million restaurant, $4 million restaurant is great, but these dinners that I've been hosting is also great, and I feel like now it's kind of time for me to take a chance on myself, you know? And I resigned from my position there, and once I resigned, we hosted a few more dinners out of my house, and at that point is when I felt like, you know what, now that we're getting a nice little buzz, how can we take it from 8 seats to 25? And we were able to do that, you know? We did that. The first spot we did that was at, the first spot we did it at was, I believe, the Bronx Public, where we hosted a 25-seat dinner there. It might have been them, I think.
231st.
Because I did 2 dinners at the Bronx Public where we did about 25 guests, 7 courses, drink pairings. And then we did the best, not the best one, but the biggest one we've done when it came to menu. We did 11 courses inside the Gun Hill Brewery.
Wow.
25 or 30 guests.
Wow.
With no kitchen. So we set up like a makeshift kitchen in the back.
Yeah.
And then we did the Bronx Brewery and we did 45 guests, 6 courses, I believe.
Sheesh.
With no kitchen as well. So that just goes to like show too is like, you know, I wanted to prove to people that we could really just do this anywhere.
Yeah.
Ideally, you know, like we set up a table here. We could cook you a fucking gourmet, fine, what I call urban fine dining experience in the middle of a studio.
Yeah. Man, that's incredible. Just to be able to think of how you're going to put the meals together. Just literally pop up. Like that's like the pop up, make these meals, these courses. Wow. So now you transitioned from just Chef Jose. Now you're Trill Cooker with these incredible experience that first you were catering to guests. Now you're catering specific dinners for people. Yep. And then where does that now take you?
So being able to build a concept literally anywhere in the Bronx, mm-hmm. and not have a home, mm-hmm. For me was super ambitious, mm-hmm. but a whole lot of fucking fun.
Right? Yeah.
Because we were able to like fucking show people that we could do this anywhere.
Yeah, damn near everywhere, even on the street, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we've actually thought about doing dinners like in the middle of the fucking street somewhere and shutting it down. But that's the point, is like we could do it anywhere. So just doing that helped me kind of really think about my concept a lot deeper and mm-hmm. really where I want to take it. Mm-hmm. One thing I haven't mentioned though, but the concept is called Breaking Bread. Mm-hmm. And the reason we went with Breaking Bread is, number one, you break bread, you know, breaking bread, you know what I'm saying? You're eating amongst, so like me when I was growing up, we used to break bread. It was like, you know, the whole family sitting at the table.
Yeah.
Every night we had to eat together, you know?
Yeah.
But it was really off. It was really based off of my love from Breaking Bad, the show.
Yeah.
You know, I always figured like, yo, how can I be like this, like underground food dealer that's like cooking in like places that people wouldn't expect, but also, you know, we're doing it in a sense of it almost kind of being illegal, mm-hmm. right? Because it's mm-hmm. underground dining.
Like, yeah.
And getting out of there before, like,
you know, before anything,
you get raided.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like, it's one of those things where it became really fun because it was like we were challenging ourselves, and those challenges were not only helping us grow, teaching us lessons, mm-hmm. But also proving to us that this was a concept that we could really
build. Yeah.
So it led into us building this concept called the Chef's Counter, which is mm-hmm. which takes, so it went from like, you know, chef's dinners inside my house to big dinners inside of like businesses, and then mm-hmm. kind of bringing it back to like home, where, like I said, I kind of reconsidered my concept, and we started hosting dinners in a spot on 140th and Willis, 142nd, okay. I believe, 140, I think it is.
Yeah.
Well, we created this concept called the Chef's Counter, where it was just a counter literally in the middle of the kitchen, a commercial kitchen. Mm-hmm. Beautiful marble type, you know, marble top, kind of like really dope vibe where you just feel like you're in the chef's universe.
Yeah.
And we cooked 7 courses with wine and beer there, and we brought this really dope, almost, you know, like fine dining feel to the Bronx without mm-hmm. it being so pretentious.
Yeah.
Right? Because it goes back to like what you were saying. Like, I went from Chef Jose to Trill Cooker, mm-hmm. and I wanted people to be themselves at these dinners because I was going to be myself.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And you've seen, you know, my videos and pictures. My dinners are the way I whatever the fuck I feel like going there, like to cook in, we're going to cook tonight.
Yeah.
Because it's not about me looking like a chef. It's about my talent and my skill.
It's what's on the plate.
It's what's on the plate that matters, you know what I'm saying? So like, it's really crazy because I tell people all the time, there'll be a lot of chefs in this world that are very, what's the word? They're very traditional, mm-hmm. and they would hate a lot of the things that I'm doing because this is not what a chef...
Yeah, it's outside the box.
It's outside the box.
Yeah.
But I think that's what makes it extra fun, not only for myself, but for the guests, is that we're not... You're not coming into this, like, restaurant with chandeliers and golden utensils. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, we've discussed, like, switching utensils out during each course to make the experience that much more finer.
Okay.
Almost like aiming for like better standards, like Michelin or something like that.
Yeah.
And we've decided not to because we just feel like that's part of our experience. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll change them if like a dish comes where it's too flavors just are gonna cross over. But if we don't have to, we kind of let the dinner go on, and people appreciated that because we've even asked some of the guests, should we change it? So the Chef's Counter allowed us to not only try the concept out more, but it also allowed us to almost test a restaurant concept throughout throughout the space in the Bronx, which allowed us to not only connect with the Bronx, but also bring people who weren't coming to the Bronx to the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And I think that was important for me, mm-hmm. in the sense of like, for example, a lot of Bronx natives don't step out the Bronx, mm-hmm. and like don't go to like the city and don't experience some things.
Yeah, yeah.
But then again, a lot of people don't come to the Bronx because they just don't ever want to come to the Bronx.
Yeah,
instead.
Yeah.
So it's like, how can we bring them here through something that is gonna show them that the Bronx is beautiful?
Yeah. Exactly.
And I was doing it through food. Mm-hmm. You know, so through the chef's concert, we were able to, you know, get a lot of press and build a very positive and ambitious and almost inspiring movement for people to see in the Bronx. But also, you know, it allowed me to really realize that this is something that I would love to do.
Yeah.
Is open up a concept like this, where it's like very intimate and it's about the chef and it's about the food and it's about the culture and it's about just being yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, the chef's counter, for me, was one of the like dopest concepts that, you know, I've thought about in the past 2 years, though.
Yeah.
Just kind of bringing that to life was pretty fucking cool, man.
Yeah. So, man, I really feel like your passion for these courses, for bringing people together, bringing communities together, bringing kind of like the what people consider a finer thing in life to people who aren't normally experiencing those things. What's your approach to a dish? Like, what's your passion behind a dish? Like, you have, like, your Instagram is full of beautiful, like, it's like artwork almost.
Thank you.
Like the dishes that you're putting on. Like, what's your approach in creating these things?
One thing I will say, I'm true a cooker, right? So I always consider myself a cook. Mm. But at the end of the day, I'm a culinary artist. And I was looking at this book recently, and it kind of like broke down different types of chefs and culinary artists. All the descriptions that broke down into it, mm-hmm. all kind of like were me.
Yeah.
And that's what made me realize, you know what? I'm not like a chef, and I'm not, you know, a cook. I'm a culinary artist. Mm. And
what's the difference? Because I wouldn't even know.
So for me,
it's interchangeable. But
it is interchangeable though.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, so if you're an executive chef for a restaurant, mm-hmm. chances are you're probably never ever touching a pan. You're just doing a lot of paperwork and you're managing people. Mm-hmm. You do create, but you create with your team, meaning mm-hmm. your sous chef or your chef de cuisine. So the chef de cuisine is going to be the one who's really creating dishes, and the sous chef is kind of like the chef de cuisine's you know, right hand. So chances are the sous chef will be cooking and working the line, where the chef de cuisine might be cooking and still being creative, because they're the ones creating the menu, obviously with the help of the chef and the sous chef, mm-hmm. but they're the ones, they're the brains. So ideally the talent is the chef de cuisine, because they're the ones who are bringing creative ideas to the table. But like I said, it's always a team effort though, because then the chef, the executive chef and the sous chef combine to make this a final dish. The executive chef always takes the credit though.
Gotcha. Okay? Yeah, yeah.
But when anyone could be a culinary artist, mm-hmm. right? Anyone could be one. It's up to them to know if they are. Me personally, I know that every day, I don't call myself a chef, because I know that my passion is cooking, mm-hmm. Not managing people.
Yeah, yeah.
My passion is making people happy, making people create these memories that they hopefully would never forget.
Yeah.
And pass on to other people, so that now they can create these memories with us. So that's why I consider myself a culinary artist and a cook, because my vision is different, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And when I do open a restaurant eventually one day, my vision is not to have, you know, a brigade of cooks. It's gonna be,
you're still gonna be in there, chef.
Like, I'm gonna be in there, so it's right still there. Gonna be me in there chefing it up with, you know, like two of my other chefs, and it'll be a very small team, and you know, maybe somebody in the front of the house, but it's gonna be a team where we all work together to earn certain accolades, mm-hmm. together as a team,
yeah.
right? Because the Yankees don't win championships alone. You know what I'm saying? They play together, and I think that's important in this industry as well. Like, mm-hmm. the best restaurants are the best restaurants because their employees are performing at their best.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So
they're
like
putting
Michelin,
it all together.
Exactly.
Even though one person gets the credit,
they're all putting in. Exactly. Yeah. But in a lot of these restaurants, the chefs give credit to everybody, I mean, because it's a team effort. Like, to get a Michelin star is a team effort. You don't do that alone.
Yeah.
You know, so something like that is very important, and you want to make a team know that you guys are all in this together, even though it's still about growth.
Mm.
But being a culinary artist has allowed me to figure out what I want to do with food, right?
Yeah.
So like One thing I do want to, what I do want to do with food is whatever the fuck I want, right? And that's what we try to like really put on the table to people. Is like, the reason we do secret menus is because we want to just cook whatever we want. We don't want to tell you this is the menu.
And you now come you're in with expecting a preconceived notion.
So one thing about me, I have no expectations, right? And I want our guests to walk in there the same. They don't know what to expect. You know, dinners at the counter were amazing because they walked into a restaurant that was closed in the dark and just saw a light shining in the back. That was the kitchen. So right off the bat, they walking in and they don't know what's going on, right? So we've already got them. You know what I'm saying? We've already intrigued.
You already shocked them before they even experience anything else.
Exactly. Sometimes they're into it. Sometimes people are like, what the fuck is going on in here, right? We've had both. But at the end of the day, people always have walked around, have walked out of that counter with a very memorable experience and always extremely excited that they experienced this experience. So for them, I'm forever grateful because without them, we would not have been able to test out these experiences. But it's about taking for me, because we can cook whatever we want, I like to just kind of like see what's around, right? So we get inspired by many things, right? Especially in food. Food is inspired by anything, really. It could be the colors of this room could inspire me to cook a dish. Like, you know, I'm looking at that guitar that's like clearing. I have plates that are clearing me that work into the whole development of a dish that screams art. But it's more than that for me, right? Because like, number one, the dish has to taste good. Right. And that's the most important thing, is like, how can we cook, you know, this piece of this beat that I know probably 90% of my guests today who are gonna come aren't gonna probably like or appreciate. But how do I present and cook the fuck out of this beat so that when they walk out of here, they're gonna be blown away? And that's where it starts at. It starts at the root, right? At what that product is that I'm given. It doesn't have to necessarily be a fruit or a vegetable. It could also be a piece of meat or a fish. And then how do we now pair flavors with that without taking away from the actual main ingredient? Through that, we determine now what kind of techniques do we want to use on this beat, you know?
To make it
extraordinary, right? To take something that's like just plain old beat and really bring out the beauty in it. For me, I think the farmer is the best part of this equation, right? Because they're the ones who are blood, sweat, and tears to grow this produce. So I think it's important for us as the chef or the cook or anybody who's really working with, you know, mom and dad from home who are cooking for their kids, to really understand what they're working with, but also be able to make the most out of it. So we have a dish, it's called Beats on Beats on Beats, and basically it's a dish just all about beets. And we take beets and we roast them, and then we marinate them. Then we take beets and we slice them raw. Then we take the stems and we pickle the stems. And then we take the leaves that are on the stems and we kind of chiffon out them and we fold them into the salad. So the dish is basically the beet from the root to
every part of it.
And we then accompany that dish with honeycomb from the market and Point Reyes blue cheese and almonds that are toasted. And the reason I add other ingredients is because, right, beets, no matter what we do with them, the marinade is going to have like a citrusy tone or acid. The raw is just going to be like a nice raw piece of beet. Then the stems are going to be also a little acidic. The leaves don't really kind of give much, but it's just about the sustainable concept into going to the plate, using every part and showing our guests that when you're at home and you got a whole beet, don't throw it out. Figure out what to do with it. Then you add the cheese in there for some funkiness, and you add the almonds for some texture. I feel like every dish should be a balance of many different things, texture being one of those things. And then the honeycomb's on there, obviously, for the sweetness. One thing the Asians do really well is they do umami, right? Which is like every sense plus the extra sense that we think we don't have. And that's what makes Asian food so great, is because
they bring out all the flavors. They're touching every part of your tongue.
And a lot of my dinners aren't Asian influenced, but the vision of how
the concept that they approach
to food, is what I try to utilize. How to make this dish, you know, overall a mouthfeel that you're gonna want more of.
Yeah.
And we're able to do that with beets. And I would say that 99% of the time, and I think I'm shortening myself a percent, but people have looked at it. I really do. Because everybody who's walked into that kitchen and had that dish can't stop talking about it. Uh-huh. And it's one of those dishes that right before I plate it, I talk about how nervous I am to plate it because of the reaction that people are gonna get towards it. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think that's the beautiful thing for me at this point in the day is like showing people not only who I am as a chef and what I'm doing and my movement, mm-hmm. but also introducing them to new things and helping them enjoy these new things.
Yeah.
You know? So with that, you know, I then determine how we're going to plate the motherfucker. And I think that's always a freestyle for us for the most part. We never really plate a dish a week ago and then, I mean, you know, a week ahead and then like, oh, this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
For us, it's like, all right, how do we plate this now? And we just go with the flow.
Wow.
For the most part.
Yeah.
It's been a few dishes that we kind of like do know how we want to plate it, but it's just like an artist, right? You give an artist a canvas, unless they already have it like drawn out on them and they know what they want to put on this mm-hmm. this canvas, and they go freestyle, they're thinking colors, they're thinking shapes, they're thinking textures, and it's the same thing.
Yeah,
the same thing, really, you know. And thankfully, I've been able to find that and figure that out, and we've been able to apply that in through our dishes, and it's like I said, it starts with the cooking, so this food just gotta taste good.
Yeah.
And we start with it just tasting good because we pick the products that we feel are the best in season right now.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredible. Like, I'm kind of blown away by like the approach to food. Like you're considering the room that you're in, then you're considering bringing that into how it's going to look and taste. And wow, that's just, man, like, that's like a whole nother, I can't even conceptualize.
It's like I said, me being a kid who never envisioned about being a chef, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, you know, a lot of chefs, their story is that when I was cooking with mom and dad or mom and grandma and shit, mm-hmm. You know, my story was like, you know, I never really cooked my mom. I ate her food. My mom was very ambitious. My mother, you know, a Puerto Rican mom, was always cooking Asian and Italian, and like she always wanted to cook out of cookbooks. So yeah. I am super grateful to my mother for, you know, being this ambitious home cook that allowed me to, once I became a chef, to realize, you know, I don't have to stick to what people want me to stick experiment. To. I can do what I want to do with it.
Yeah.
And doing my own thing allowed me to do what I wanted to do with food. Mm. And this is why when we curate our experiences nowadays, they're curated the way we want them to be curated, mm. From the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
Because we want you to remember not only the food, but we want you to remember the time you had with us.
Yeah.
Because I think that's important, right? It's like, that's why we're breaking bread, you know, because we want to break bread together. But we also, you know, I feel like the people that have been coming through a lot of my dinners and a lot of the guests, nowadays we're more family than friends. It's like, you know, we're just always kind of now seeing each other, and like always, whether it's through a dinner or not, we're just, you know, always staying in touch. And I think that's what keeps this experience very trill. Mm-hmm. Is because we're not giving people anything that we wouldn't give to ourselves, which is ourselves, right? The realness.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I feel that my niche is also different.
Yeah.
Because it's not about going to a typical restaurant and sitting and seeing your waiter and ordering your food. And while that's great, I do it all the time. Mm-hmm. Me and my wife eat out a lot. Mm-hmm. I feel that my experience brings something so different. And because it's my experience, I have a lot of fun just doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a baseball player, right? Plays baseball for a shitload of money because they love fucking playing baseball.
Yeah.
And they're working hard to be the best ball player, but they're doing something they love, and that's why they are so great at it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it too. Is like the reason I'm able to conceptualize a dish like that is because I really love what the fuck I do right now.
Yeah, there's no half ass.
There's no half ass in it. And it's my name too, you know what I'm saying? So I really gotta make sure that when I'm working on a dish, as wild as I may want it to be, I still have to kind of like bring it down a little too, because I ain't trying to scare people away either, you know.
Yeah, you want to keep them coming back.
I want to keep them coming back, and I don't want to be too I want to be creative, and I'm never going to let the guests determine how creative I'm going to be, but I also don't want to, like,
be a little off-putting.
Exactly. Or go too far with it. Yeah. Go too far with it. So, you know, it's also about that, right? Knowing, like, what your limits are. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if I was cooking, I don't know, in a four-star restaurant in the city, then I'll fucking put whatever on the plate.
Yeah.
Because they don't give a fuck. They just...
They're going for that. To be able to tell their friends, I went to a four-star
restaurant. Exactly.
Yeah.
They just, like, you could put a piece of fucking bread with butter on it and just say the butter was made with, like, some crazy fucking milk, and they're going to fucking go crazy.
Special Vermont cows.
Exactly. You know, it's like, yo, these cows were raised in a private setting. Like, it's like, and they'll love it. And it's just because for them, it's just about that bragging rights, right?
Yeah.
I love my experience because it's bragging rights, but it's... It's like when the person comes, they're like, holy fuck, thank you for telling me about that shit, because that was pretty fucking cool, you know, and I would never imagine an experience like that. So that led to the creativeness of it. It's just me figuring that out through my journey.
Yeah.
You know, you said you saw Back to Chef's Tape, right? Like, go a little further back and look at my food a little further back, you know what I'm saying? And you can see how much it's evolved, you know, and before it was just like, fucking rest, like family style. It was like everything on the plate just piled on, and really had no kind of like technique or style to it. It was just there. It was good, but it was just like mound of good food. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what it is about growing. So like as I grew, I was like, all right, now I could cook good now.
Yeah. You know, it's gonna taste good.
How can I make a plate now? How can I make it look better? You know what I'm saying? And I'm still growing. Like nowadays, you know, I look at restaurants out here that are like, you know, doing 15 courses, and they're like doing really dope food, but it's like so simple, and like now my mind is like, all right, simplicity is like where it's at. So you know, we've been working on a lot simpler you know, concepts when it comes to creating these dishes now, just so that now that highlight of the dish actually shines more. But every day I'm learning, man. Every day is like, whether it's plating or learning new techniques, it's all about the growth, and it's all about how can we get better, right? Like I've worked with many chefs. I've competed in a few different types of like food competitions.
Yeah.
And I felt like even when I was competing, it wasn't about the competition. Right? Mm-hmm. It was about, number one, who we're going to meet here, the chefs that we're going to be able to network with.
Yeah.
You know, may the best chef win, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it was more about like challenging myself to be in these positions, to also be able to see if I'm able to cook something in 45 minutes or cook something better than a chef that was on, I don't know, Chopped or something. So that was, you know, that's always been a great thing, and that's built me to here now too. That's what got me onto, I think, Hell's Kitchen, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what made that happen. I feel it was like the practice that led me to that.
Yeah.
It's funny, my brother-in-law told me one time, he goes, yo, you're the true definition of, what the fuck is that word he uses? Holy shit, I'm mad. I can't remember it, though. I can't remember that shit, though. But when I remember, I'm going to text you that
shit. But you're the true definition of it.
Yeah, but I'm just definition of it. But I forget what the fuck he says. I feel like calling him now.
Yeah.
But he told me one day, and I was like, nah, you know, I'm not that. Because he was making it seem like, the saying, it makes it seem like if I'm lucky. True definition of luck. Is what he told me. He said, yo, you're the true definition, not of luck, of something that means luck, but it made it seem like I was lucky.
Fortune?
No. Trust me, I'm gonna hit you. When you say, oh shit, now you're gonna have to record me again.
Yeah, I'm gonna record. He's like, just say the word.
But basically the saying is trying to say that I'm lucky. Mm-hmm. And I try to explain to him, you know, that it's not luck, but he made sense. And it's like, when you prepare yourself, when the opportunity presents itself, you get lucky breaks.
Yeah.
And when I saw it that way, I was like, you know what, you're right. Because I prepared myself for the past 5 years, and there's been many times that I've wanted to quit and not do this anymore and just continue to work for restaurants, but my persistence kept me going. And then doors or opportunities started presenting themselves. And because I was prepared, I was not ready to take on those. Hell's Kitchen being one of those opportunities.
Yeah, I think there's a quote, I forget who said it. It's like, luck is the residue of preparation. And, you know, all this stuff was kind of building. And then you get this huge look on Hell's Kitchen. How is that? Like, do you have, like, this extra motivation, you know, coming from the Bronx? And just, like, you're already kind of, you know, competing with all these other chefs. Like, how is that?
For me, like I said before, I've always wanted to be an underground chef. I have very good friends that are celebrity chefs, and they've pushed me to do it as well. And a lot of times I've considered it. I've been a backup chef for the Bebop Buffet show a few times, but I never got on the show. So it's one of those things where I've made it to a certain part and I feel like, damn.
Yeah, you just got that, still not yet, right? Yeah, yeah.
But it's been the whole journey. The whole journey's been like that, like I said earlier. You know, it's about that preparation. So being a backup chef allowed me to work on my concept more and allowed me to build myself. But what happened was I was tired of, like, being a backup chef. And I told my wife, just through manifestation, like I said earlier, and I'm really huge on manifestation nowadays. I will say it is a real thing. I told my wife, you know what? I'm going to apply to either Hell's Kitchen or Top Chef when I see the casting calls.
Yeah, yeah.
A week later, I'm working at Eataly, and it's a busy night, and I get an email from a casting producer kind of inviting me to the show. Inviting me to cast. So when I saw that email, I was kind of like, holy shit. I called my wife. I'm like, yo, this is crazy. Didn't I just tell you this a week ago? I just got this email, like, inviting me to cast. And then the email was very specific, you know, saying about them looking for talented chefs and kind of wanting to go a different route. Because I've seen the show before, and I'll be honest, like, the first few years, I wasn't into it because I just felt like, you know, it was kind of like, wasn't the real thing that was going down in kitchens. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like,
yeah, and you actually worked, so you know behind the scenes what's actually going on.
So you see
yeah.
these people who are on the show, and none of them were actually chefs, and it's like, okay, so what are they really trying to do here?
Yeah.
So Top Chef was always on my mind because that's like a real show where it's like these chefs are really being challenged and growing.
Yeah.
So you know what? I turned them down. I said, you know, I wasn't interested in doing Hell's Kitchen, and mainly because I was busy at the restaurant. Like yeah, I said, yeah. my sous chef was out. So a few emails later, they kept kind of persisting, and then I eventually was like, all right, I'll go cast. And you know, from that casting, got flown out to LA to do some more preliminary notions. And then about 3 months after that, or 2 months after that, I got the call that I was casted for the show. And you know, for me, it was kind of like one of those things that was pretty crazy. It was like, you know, I told my wife about it. You know, I still get chills to this day.
Yeah.
I was like, I told my wife about it, you know what I'm saying? And then a week later, we get the email. And then, like, 5 months later, I'm being flown to LA to go film for this show that, me personally, I would have never imagined in a million years. Because, you know, being a kid from the Bronx, like, never really knowing that I had opportunity out there that was better than just, you know, Wales Avenue, or more than that. Just being at that point, being on that plane, was very, very surreal for me. Because it was like, you know, I'm going to be away from my family, you know, away from my kids for a little while. And a lot of that kind of went through my mind, you know, like, what, you know, at one point when I landed and I got to the hotel, I was like, what the fuck am I getting myself into?
Yeah.
You know, I was kind of like, damn, you know. And I, and then at that point, I was extremely confident as a chef, right? Because I've watched the show before and I'm like, shit, I can fucking cook, you know what I'm saying? But when you really walk into that kitchen, you know, it's a lot of things, you know. It's daunting. It's you know, it's unreal almost, right? It's like you walk into this kitchen that you see on TV, and you've seen so many people like go in and out of, and you see the chef who's, you know, this amazing chef throughout the world, you know, like Michelin star chef that's built his own name too. You know, he was a soccer player that wasn't going to be a chef and became a chef because he got an injury.
Yeah.
So it kind of relates a little to me. It's like, I wasn't trying to be a chef, but I had to do it because I had nothing else to do.
Yeah.
So just being in there, like, that was just something in its own. The experience itself, forget about it. You know, I think it was, for me, one of the best experiences I put myself through.
Yeah.
When it comes to challenging myself, when it comes to like opening up opportunities, when it comes to like meeting new people, when it comes to really, really humbling me down and like teaching me that you can be confident in what you do, but you also gotta be very, very humble about it too. You know what I'm saying? I went on the show, I was extremely confident. First episode, I'm up for elimination, you know. So for me, standing there for elimination, in my head, I'm thinking, like, shit, I could go home tonight.
Yeah, it's like a hit in the face.
It's a hit in the face, you know. And I'm like, maybe I gotta stop worrying about how much I'm gonna fucking, you know, beat these guys and stop trying to fucking beat myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's when I started realizing on the show that I need to just work on me every day and not worry about who I'm gonna be better than. Because at any moment, any fuck up that I create could send me home.
Yeah.
And not that I, you know, listen, the like hundreds of thousands of chefs apply for the show and cooks, you know, all over the world.
Yeah.
only eight of us made it on.
Yeah,
you know, because it was rookies versus veterans. So there was only eight new cast members. So to just be one of those eight,
yeah,
for me, being a kid from the Bronx was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? And like you know, I'm extremely happy right now because like I was able to watch episodes with my grandma. You know what I'm saying? Grandfather, you know what I'm saying? I was able to, like, my parents live in Florida, but like we would FaceTime, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so like
yeah.
It was one of those things that I was extremely proud to like have my grandma see, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody in my family ever done nothing like this, you know? Nobody in my family ever challenged themselves in the sense of like trying to go out there and do something like on a whim, really, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, without any financial backing or anything like that.
Yeah.
So to see myself at that level through the like past 6 year journey to up to that, you know, for me was just something that I still don't believe happened.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm extremely grateful for Gordon Ramsay, you know, and the casting producer who found me.
Mm-hmm.
Because without them, you know, I wouldn't have had this opportunity. I feel like just being on the show alone helped me not only show the world my passion for food and for my family and just for life in general.
Yeah.
But I feel like the show also allowed me to not only build great relationships with the other chefs around me,
mm-hmm.
But it also allowed me to inspire many people around the world.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I was in the top eight, and I could have gone further and I could have pushed myself more. And I just feel like, you know, at that point in time, for me, it was more about me. It was more about where the show was going in the sense of characters versus like true passion,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I knew my path. Like I was on top of dishes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
all the time,
times,
you know what
yeah.
I'm saying? So it's like I'm already showing you I'm a chef.
Yeah, that you're great.
You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
creative and all that. Like yeah, everybody's gonna have bad days during service. But you know, the show allowed me to realize what I'm really doing it for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, am I really doing it to be a celebrity chef or to be like this chef for Gordon Ramsay, or am I doing this for me to build my legacy? So I felt that's why it was very important for me when I got home to start doing dinners out of my house to
yeah.
then expand them through the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted the people who were around, who were coming to my experiences, to know that this is really me.
Yeah.
Then when you see it on TV, now you know it's really me and know that this is always going to be what we're going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought that was very important to lay that down in the sense of like keeping things as real as we can possibly keep them.
Mm-hmm.
But the show, at the end of the day, I feel like if they were to call me, I'll go do it again. You know, real talk.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, not to be cocky or anything, but I looked really good on TV. I really enjoyed watching myself on it, bro. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's really weird. Like, yo, like you sit at home and you watch other like actors and you watch people on TV and you be like, all right, whatever. But when I really watched that, you know, because I lived it, I felt it more. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? And like, I would like watch some of my like mannerisms on the show, and I would just be like, damn, little
great
like, damn, like yo,
yeah,
great,
yeah,
like that
yeah.
was pretty fucking good. Like,
yeah.
you know, and you know, it's a lot of editing and all that though, but they did a fucking great job of editing, though. I just gotta say,
yeah,
and
especially
I feel
your
like
scenes,
yeah, especially my scenes though, and I feel like that inspires me more now.
Yeah,
you know, to like to do something else with mm-hmm. it, you know, whether it's starting something of my own
yeah.
or just competing on other shows.
Yeah.
When I got eliminated, the amount of emails and the amount of messages that I received from fans all over the world was it was heartfelt. You know,
mm-hmm.
it had me crying. It had me in tears the next day.
Yeah,
you know, just
yeah.
reading a lot of them. I never thought that, you know, like I said from the beginning, like somebody like myself, you know, could impact so many people around the world and
yeah.
like hopefully guide them to find their visions and their dreams and
yeah.
their love and passions. But when I that moment right there is what solidified what it really meant for me, right?
Yeah.
That's what it meant for me. It meant helping others out, right? Through
yeah.
through whatever that platform is, whether it's inspiration,
yeah.
whether it's you know, whether it's happiness of seeing me cook or being a fan of mine or loving what they saw, or whatever it is that made them love me,
mm-hmm.
Just kind of made my heart go, you know, grow bigger.
Yeah.
And I'm forever grateful for all of them, really, because
yeah.
now they've inspired me to be better to now inspire them again more. I think that's how it works, right? It's like one hand
washes
the other. And my inspiration inspired them to then re-inspire me to want to do more. Whether it's open a restaurant or whatever that next is, I hope they're going to continue to watch the journey, because you know they'll be able to now experience that journey with me now. You know, because of the re-inspiration that they drove back into
you. So you've inspiring, you've got community support, you're building legacy. What do you what's your next ambition as far as like community and
I've been working on doing with my partner. We've been looking for spaces. We want to open up something. We want to open up something that's almost like a studio, like a culinary studio, where we're able to not only host our events, but also build some type of initiatives or programs with schools to kind of like have the kids come work with us or do cooking classes where we can kind of teach them basic techniques and also you know, have them get a hands-on experience to see if this is something that they really want to do. I think that's the hardest thing about being a teenager and being, you know, going through the high school phase to college is that when you're a teenager, you really don't know what you want to do. You know, nobody does, you know.
You don't know who you are, really.
You don't, exactly. So, like, how you know, you don't, if you don't know who you are, how do you know you're going to be the successful doctor or this, you know, movie star on TV? You don't know that. I think that's part of the learning process. And it's really tough because right out of high school, you got to go to college and you got to really decide what you want to do. And a lot of times people who go to college, you know, and they major in these majors, a lot of times they don't even, that's not even what they end up doing in their career. That's not their passion. You know, they find it somewhere else. So I think that allowing, having a studio like this would allow for us to work with, you know, and it's not only youth, you know, it's also teaching, you know, locals from the community what a beat is, how to cook it properly, or what
and
to
how
do
use
with
the whole
it
thing.
It's about how can we build something like that and not only create something really special for the Bronx in the sense of possibly, you know, a fine dining restaurant, you know, in the Bronx that's still very urban and real, but also using that space that we can work on different aspects of the community. And what those aspects are, you know, it's hard to say right now because we have to like have it there and know what's needed to know what we need to bring to the table. But the idea is to like help out, right? Like however we can. You know, whether it's through, you know, hands-on experience or whether it's through just kind of like maybe even doing our dinners and having them just sit as guests and see the experience. And you know, a lot of these kids are not going to go and eat at a restaurant like per se in the city or Jean Georges. So being able to have them come experience this on one of our counters would be a dope thing too, because now they can see, hey, listen, this looks like fun, or you know, I don't know if I want to be, you know, working
doing
this
all
heat
this.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
doing all
sweating
this stuff,
all this
yeah.
much, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Especially the chef say I got to keep my hat on and I take it off. So it's a lot of those things, you know. And the restaurant industry is tough, man. You gotta have like, you know, you have to have a tough skin, and a lot of these chefs don't fuck around, you know what I'm saying? And you fuck up, they will fucking kick you out the kitchen, and they don't care to throw shit at you. And so, before somebody goes into something like that, I would want them to
get some type of taste of it.
Get some type of taste of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I would have gotten a taste of it, I would have saved a lot of money, you know what I'm saying, for school. And I would have went to school for something that could have helped me in the future, in the sense of now building my business bigger, right? So like, instead of using the money to like learn how to cook, I would have rather learned how to cook like on my own time or like by my hustle
and try to get the business aspect,
and then go and go to get, you know, get a bachelor's or an associate's in business management or in some type of business degree, so that now I'm two steps ahead of the game. And that's what, you know, that's one of my biggest things is like, you want to get into the food industry, go work for free for a little bit. Test it out first. You know, because like I said, coming out of high school, you don't really know who you are yet. If it's music, go, you know, find this. Listen, Instagram is huge, man. You could DM somebody and be like, hey, listen, I just want to come and like sit in on a session and just watch. You know what I'm saying? You come to the music studio, you may not be wanting to like mess with all those buttons there. You know what I'm saying? It's like that may not be something you want to do. So test it out first. You know what I'm saying? Like you're young. You know, and it's just society too and it's parents, right? Like we push our kids to like go from like high school to college right away, and it's like you have to do it right away. And and it's important to do it right away because you know we're only getting older, but it's also something where I think we just need to find ourselves. And I think a culinary studio would allow kids that felt that that's what they wanted to do at least test it out without jumping straight into it.
That's beautiful. That's
incredible. I mean, and then the things are, the possibilities are endless after that, right? I mean, it's just being able to have the space to then now work these initiatives in that we can somehow, you know, work out with schools or whatever it may be, like community centers. It doesn't really matter where.
Yeah, it was up a lot of doors.
It will though. I mean, I think just people would appreciate it. You know, I think that just learning something different would be something that they would appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, it just adds now to the cool factor. It's like, oh, now it's like the chef from like Hell's Kitchen that's teaching us. And it's like,
yeah.
So it's like, yo, like, all right, people love me. So then, now you're able to like be here with me and say you know me and like. Like, let's just be chill. Let's have fun. Let's. My whole thing is, like, success, right? Mm-hmm. I always say this in my dinner. Success. People got the word success messed up sometimes. They feel like success is based on how much money you make. But success is not based on how much money you make. It's, for me, it's based on how happy you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think finding that happiness helps you grow your success, right? So my happiness is what I'm doing now. It's cooking and bringing these experiences to people. That's you know, that's it for me right there. You know, what I'm gonna do with it next is part of the journey, right? We just gotta figure that out as we go along. If I was to tell you, you know, opening a restaurant is what it is, I could possibly be lying, you know, because I don't know if that's exactly what it is. Would I love one? You know, but I think that the time has to be right for me to make that decision. You know, it has to be something that's well thought out and well planned out before we jump into, you know, into a restaurant. Number one, you know, it takes a lot of money and time to get into them. So it's just one of those things where pop-up dinners are extremely fun. Tiring because we gotta lug a lot of shit. But you know, if they said it was gonna be easy, then everybody be doing this.
Exactly.
So you know, just gotta make it happen. And hopefully this restaurant shit happens. But
yeah, it pops up.
The studio would be one of the main things that I would really like aim towards, though.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, last question: if you could give advice to your 15-year-old self, what would you say to you?
Oh wow, my 15-year-old self. Let me see. I had just 16. I met my girl, my wife actually.
Wow.
We 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, 20 years.
That's beautiful.
You know, I would tell my 15-year-old self to wake the fuck up, first of all. You know, I felt like I was lost. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was kind of like, I'm doing a lot of dumb shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I would first be like, you know, wake up. Like, you know, I come from a really great family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, we're very, very supportive and stuff and very, like, tight.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the stuff I was doing as a 15-year-old was very rebellious, you know, and it's not stuff that my family instilled in me.
Would want, yeah.
So that was something for me that I would say would be like, you know, like, just wake the fuck up but also never give up, you know, never give up because even as a child, you know, sometimes you want to give up, you know, and things happen during your life that can kind of like make you want to give up. And I think staying strong and not giving up is important because to get the journey never ends, right? The journey never ends. So if you give up, the journey's over, right?
Yeah.
So then what else are we doing it for if you give up, right? Like if I was to give up today, like that's it. That's no more. There's no more dinners. There's no more true cooker. There's like everything we've worked so hard
to get to this point.
For nothing, right? So, as a 15-year-old, you're still learning and you're still evolving.
Mm.
But like I said, you could be in a relationship with a girl and like she leaving you, you just feel like depressed and whatever. Like, So kids are gonna go through that. Those are emotions, you know what I'm saying? And emotion could force you to like make certain decisions. But I feel that staying true to yourself, you know, as well, just kind of like, you know, nowadays there's a lot of bullying going on and stuff like that, and it's unfortunate because, you know, there's no reason to ever bully somebody. It doesn't matter how they look or what they, nothing matters, you know. And I think a lot of kids, they go through a lot of this, and stuff like that forces them to kind of like not believe in themselves or not have any confidence or you know, and things of that nature. And I think that telling myself to always be confident in myself, you know, like I said, I was always a kid that was shy and I didn't want to like do certain things, and I felt like that held me back a lot. But it also you know, brought my self-esteem down too, you know. You think you're like ugly or whatever, you know, like people go through their those emotions, you know. It's, you know, and a lot of it is happening now. There's a lot of like depression happening, and I think a lot of it is based on just people kind of like not having that self-confidence in themselves to know that it doesn't matter what people are saying, you know.
Yeah, just be true to you.
Just be true to you, you know. And like, obviously, you know, there's outlets out here, like, you know, social media and a lot of stuff where people, you know, bully on there too, and that also causes people to drop their self-esteem. But you know, we just need to like know that, you know, we just need to own our own, you know what I'm saying? Our journey's ours, and however we go about it, it's how we go about it. You know, who's to say how we should go about our journeys?
Yeah, it's and at your
15,
life.
And it's your life, you know, and at 15, you got a lot of people telling you different things. You know, you got your teachers, you know, you got your parents, you got your family members.
Yeah.
You know, like, when I first started cooking, ain't nobody in my family would have ever imagined this right now happening. You know what I'm saying? When I first started cooking, it was just like, oh, finally, he's going to do something. You know what I'm saying? You know, coming out of high school, I was probably least likely to succeed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think it's that, right? Telling my 15-year-old self, always believe in yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Don't matter what anybody says, really. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because people are always going to talk. We're always talking.
Yeah, yeah.
But just believe in yourself and just know that anything is possible. Because it really is. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, you know, I still can't believe certain things that are happening in my life right now and the people that I'm connecting with and the possible things that could possibly happen for me. So to be a 15-year-old kid to then think to when you're 36, it's impossible.
You can't see that.
You can't do that. So I think that any 15-year-old out there right now just needs to know that they're gonna be who they're gonna be. And that's perfectly fucking fine, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what life is about, is being you. You know what I'm saying? Like, if God wanted us all to be the same, he would have made us all the same. So we need to just understand that and just use it in our everyday lives, you know what I'm saying? Because it's important for our self-growth. You know, once you know that you have that belief in yourself and you have that confidence, it builds other things. You know, it built, like, when I first started doing dinners in like these spaces, that was just me sitting at the bar having a drink. You know what I'm saying? Like, checking out the space and being like, yo, this spot is dope. Hey, bartender, who do I talk to? I want to do something here. So, you know, without me believing in myself, without me being confident and taking those steps to like want it, you know, I would not be where I'm at today.
Yeah.
You know, so if I always say this, you know what I'm saying? And I wish I would have told my 15-year-old self a lot of these things, because I started this movement 6 years ago, so I'm 36 now, so when I was 30. So I wish I would have started this when I was like 25 or 22, you know what I'm saying? Because who knows where I could have been at now.
Yeah.
But going back to like what we were saying, at 15 years old, we don't even know, you know, we don't even know like what underwear are we gonna wear now? Like, we ain't even, you know what I'm saying? Like, we don't know nothing. Like, you just, you know, there's a lot of guidance that needs to be guided for the youth. And I feel like as a creative now, you know, food is my thing, and I'm not gonna like try to teach somebody how to spin a record or nothing like that. But however I can to like help them, kind of help them figure something out, you know, that would mean a lot to me. Because if they do become a chef and they become this big chef somewhere, I know that I played, you know, a little part in that, that's an amazing thing. You know, so I'm that's my goal, right? My goal is for anybody who's ever worked with me,
to progress
and then reach out to me to be like, hey, you won't believe where I'm gonna be at next. And for me, that just means the world to me.
Yeah,
it really does though.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for dropping all these gems, for being on the podcast. Where can people find you?
People can find me on Instagram, trill.cooker. They can go to trillcooker.com. Even though I haven't messed with my site like in a year, I gotta get on it. But trillcooker.com. What kind of people watch this though? Like, it's just everybody.
We're everybody. Well, okay. Primarily right now, Bronx. But
yeah. So trillcooker.com and trill.cooker on Instagram. Mm-hmm. That's really my main
outlet.
My main, yeah. I've tried the Twitter and all that stuff, but I just don't like pictures. I don't really like to be typing a lot. It's like, it's hard for me to even create.
Well, as a chef, it's very visual, very visual.
Yeah, it's hard for me to even come up with a caption sometimes, some of my IG posts. So I'm like, you know, I got to stay from the Twitter. And Facebook is like for family and friends and like stuff like that. And now like a lot of like Hell's Kitchen fans like now start following me and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm always on Instagram though. Like that's, I think I'm on Instagram too much sometimes, I think.
It happens too much though.
Oh, it's not good.
Yeah. So thank you again for being on. This is another episode of Creative Hustle. Signing off.
Appreciate you.
Thank you. If you ain't got a passion, why you living? If you ain't taking action, why you bitching? Go ahead, tell me that I'm switching. Hardest sticks together when you stick into your mission. Like, not everyone's gonna make it. Opportunity ain't given, gotta take it. This for all my go-getters, working off no sleep, we don't know no better. Hey, it's Mike. Thanks for listening to Creative Hustle. If you'd like to learn more about how we're highlighting the creatives we love, visit our website, creativehustleshow.com. You can also find us on the Bronx Brand app by downloading it in the App Store. Follow us on social media, at Creative Hustle Show, and support by sharing our content with your friends. We truly appreciate the support. Keep creating.